Hi, welcome to Session 3 of the Advanced SCD Techniques course, the final Q&A. I'm Jordan Reisner. I'm here with Stephen Wright. And I want to start off with a quote from an email I got from one of the Advanced Course members earlier today. And she said, "I have organized my health goals, the supplements, and the tests I would like to ask for, and I never would have been able to do this without your help." Now, this is great work, and the reason I want to bring this up is that this is the real reason that we did this course. Yeah, we wanted to give you all the tools that you needed to heal your gut, just like we've been through. But really, the most important thing we wanted is for you to take back the ownership of your health. And we wanted you to set a health goal. We wanted you to be able to use your doctors as a support network and partners along the way as you sort of take back control of your health and start to heal. And we really wanted you to review the many different techniques and tips that we gave you to find the one that might work for you and start testing it right away. Not in 3 weeks, not in a month, not when I feel a little better, but actually take action to start feeling better and just feel how good that momentum can feel when you make a change, you make a decision, and it works. And for years, you know, we've been taught to fall into this pattern of just handing over our health to an overworked or exhausted or even just way too busy medical professional. But now it's time for us to take that back and have some ownership of it and stop giving away our power to someone that can't handle it. And that's the real purpose behind this course, to give you everything you need to do that, to be able to take back the power of controlling your own health, to research these things on your own and test them. And that's just why I love this email, because, you know, it meant that at least one person really from this course and actually used it to start feeling better, and that is just awesome.
Dude, I could not agree more. And I'm just really excited to see emails like this of people taking charge and making plans to get better, because, like we said, that's really what it's all about. And, you know, for people listening, we just want you to know why. And the why is really so that you can – we know what you can achieve when you feel better, because we know what we've been able to achieve once we got better. And when you wake up and you just feel damn good, your life starts to change. It becomes amazing what you can do in a day, things you never thought of, like how you can affect the lives of the people around you, like your kids or your friends that you've been wanting to call but you haven't, and the work that you can create either, you know, artistically or at your job, that just might change the world because you're going to be so inspired of overcoming your health, and that's what this is really all about. And I really think there's something about having a digestive problem and knowing just how low you can go. People like us, you know, we've seen the dark side of health, the destructive side of our inner minds. We've been to the lows. But then if we're able to rise against the people who tell us there's no answer, that you have to live this way in this chain, in this cage, you have to take this pill, you have to feel miserable, blah, 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 blah. When you can rise against that and slowly and steadily make progress against that, I think us people who have the courage to fight this battle, it begins to change you. Slowly and steadily, it changes you, and you become a different person. It gives you strengths that you never knew you had. And that's really what we want to achieve here with all the work at SC Lifestyle. It really is all about empowering as many people as we can by overcoming their digestive problems, because we know in the end that you're all going to change the world in a little way, and that's going to make it a better place.
That's awesome, man. That's awesome. All right, well, with that little introduction, I want to get into some of the great questions we have lined up for tonight, so hopefully we can still have some time at the end for live Q&A. First up, we have a question from Andy. Steve, you ready to rock, man?
Yeah, man, I'm all fired up right for that interlude. Let's do this.
All right. Andy says, "Steve and Jordan, thanks a lot for the ongoing input and feedback. It's helped immensely just to know that there's an experienced sounding board out there. Here's a question for me specifically, but also for the upcoming Q&A. Do you have any thoughts on Elite, a supposed SCD-friendly electrolyte drink? I'm towards the end of phase 1 of SCD, and though I had a minor worsening of my symptoms after a colonoscopy last week, I seem to be improving back to where I was, possibly aided by eliminating coffee, yogurt, and bananas and grape juice for now. I'd love to introduce Elite as one of my upcoming 4-day trials if you think it's not too advanced. Although I'm taking a good regimen of GI Pro supplements, I'd love to further improve my snacking and liquid intake with something like this. That seems like it'd be a smart move. Thanks, Andy."
Okay, cool, Andy. Thanks for the question. That's a great one. So first I want to start off a little high level, and then I'm going to come back to your question and give you like a direct answer. And this is just kind of, I guess, to put you through my mindset in the hopes that you guys can start to adopt my mindset as you look at your own lives. And my first question when I read this email is why? Why do you want to take this elite drink, this electrolyte drink? Because in your email, you didn't tell me anything about why you'd want to take it. You know, what I would be asking myself, what are more electrolytes going to do for you? What symptoms are you having that would cause you to think that it's related to electrolytes? Because in the email, like I said, you didn't describe anything that I would think, oh, man, Andy needs more electrolytes. So the reason being is, you know, you're getting better and better. You said that. And so why would you want to deviate from a plan that's currently working? You removed some of the irritants. You know, you just went through the colonoscopy, and it sounds like you're getting better and better. So I would say don't deviate from the plan unless there's like a symptom or something that would cause you to deviate. So say there was a symptom. Say that you're having some problems that might indicate electrolyte imbalance, such as cramping or dehydration, maybe fatigue. So we'll get back to the question here. What about this elite drink, right? So I looked up Elite, and Elite has the listed ingredients of seawater, low-sodium C, mineral concentrate, purified water, and potassium chloride. So right there, it's SE legal. You know, I just hope that the business there, they have good business practices, they make it, but it seems like they should. I'm not really worried about it being not legal. So right off the bat, what do we notice? We notice that it contains three of the five most important electrolytes for the body, sodium, potassium, and magnesium. And these are a few of the biggies for electrolytes in your body. The others are calcium and phosphorus. So to me, it looks okay if you wanted to take it. But in some respects, you might just, you know, kick back a teaspoon of real sea salt and purified water and eat a banana and call it the same. I mean, you wouldn't be getting the magnesium, but you'll get a little bit from the banana, just like you're going to get a little bit from the solution. The other idea I would throw out there is if you want to check into some of the buffered vitamin C powder we talked about earlier in the course, and that contains vitamin C, calcium, magnesium, and potassium in as big of amounts or much bigger amounts than just one serving this elite drink. And then if you wanted to like match the elite drink and make it even better, like 10 times better, throw, you know, a quarter to a half teaspoon of sea salt into that same mixture, one serving the vitamin C powder, and you pretty much got the best drink possible from an electrolyte standpoint. So, yes, you could take it if you really thought that you needed it. Again, I would caution against, you know, unless you have something that warrants you taking it, don't deviate from the plan. The plan seems to be working pretty good for you. Don't just add stuff to add stuff. Be methodical about it. And lastly, there's a little comment in there in your email that I wanted to address real quick, and that was you're talking about wanting to snack more or something like that. And I just want to point out that snacking is not necessarily always a great idea. It can be a great strategy if you need to boost calories or you're using it specifically for a certain thing. If you're specifically looking to better your digestion, you want to not graze or like snack all day long. Instead, you want to break your meals or your eating into meals. That might be three meals, it might be four meals, it might be one meal, it might be six meals. Just make sure they're meals and there's no eating in between, because remember we talked about the whole stomach acid and enzyme release, how it's all pH regulated, and it takes time for all that to happen. So if you're grazing throughout the day, you're going to mess up this process and possibly, you know, have worse digestion. I don't know, Jordan, if you have anything to ask there or add there.
No, that was solid, man. Let's keep rolling.
Okay, cool. So Amber's got a good question in here. Hey, Jordan, Steve. I read on Pecan Bread website that it is due to the lack of enzymes released in the duodenum that complex sugars pass through the intestines. The bad bacteria feed on these sugars and multiply. Do you know if the lack of enzymes is permanent, genetic, or can the body get to a point of health where it is producing the proper amount of the necessary enzymes to break down the complex sugars for absorption? By the way, thank you so much for doing so much and sharing your research into the digestive diseases, the mechanics of the digestive system, and the alternate treatments. Moreover, thank you for sharing your journey and experience through the diet. You've inspired me and given me hope throughout my healing process. I have organized my goals and good to go. I would never have been able to do this without your help. So thanks, Amber. That's a great message. Thanks for sharing that with everyone. So, Jordan, that's a pretty good question. Go with it, man.
All right, Amber. Thanks. So it could be genetic, you know, if you're talking about something like fructose malabsorption and there's a genetic defect with the GLUT transporters that help move the fructose across the gut barrier and into the blood. You know, but really that's, in most cases, a genetic enzyme deficiency or transport problem is so rare. In this case, you know, I assume that this is part of the weird disease and parts of our digestive process are broken, right? That whole idea. But let me explain some more. You know, if you're talking about something like safe starches, which we talked about in training session 6, those are going to be complex, you know, polysaccharide chains. And those need to be cleaved apart by amylase, which is a digestive enzyme that we produce. And the glucose molecules, you know, need to be absorbed in the small intestine. Now, in the case of most complex sugars, the lack of enzymes to break them down is usually associated with digestive disease, and especially with small intestinal bacterial overgrowth. You know, it's further hampered when the microvilli are damaged and can't properly cleave those complex molecules down into sizes that the enzymes can do their work with. You know, when we can't break them down, then they're going to get consumed by that bad bacteria, which is what you talked about, that just promotes the bacteria to continue to overgrow. You know, I personally think that this has more to do with low stomach acid and the pH levels being off. We talked about that in session 2. And the reason I say that is that most enzymes in the body, for example, some specific enzymes in the entrance of the small intestine, they need to be released in an optimal pH around 7 to 9 in order to just do their job. Okay, so if the pH is off coming into the small intestine from the stomach, or if it's okay and it comes in and the bile salts or pancreatic function isn't properly working, those enzymes will be released, or the timing might be not right, and the pH will be off, and they won't be able to do their job, okay? And that's all going to result in those sugars to be not broken down further and feed that bad bacteria. So in this case, you know, to answer your question, I don't feel like it's a permanent thing. Genetic defects in that area, they do happen, but I think they're pretty rare from what I've read. So I think it's going to take a lot of healing and stomach acid correction before the whole system can work properly again. There's so many pieces of that process that depend on each other and that are feedback loops that it's very complex. And the first thing is that if you can get a handle on your small intestinal bacterial overgrowth and get that under control, and then also take betaine-HCl with digestive enzymes, I wouldn't hesitate to test something like safe starches, you know, something like sweet potatoes or yams. But again, that's an advanced technique, right? That's what we're talking about here. So you have to make sure you got that small intestinal bacterial overgrowth in place first. And if you start to experience signs that your small intestinal bacterial overgrowth is coming back on when you start to test these things, you may still have a dysfunction that's going on, as, you know, being able to fail to break them down small enough to absorb them. And you're going to start promoting that bacterial overgrowth again. So that'd be a case where you'd want to back off and go back to what you're doing before. But I think to come back around here, it goes back to the fact that we're diseased in this state. And there's lots of parts of our bodies that are just not functioning properly. And they all depend on each other. And this is just a piece of them. So with some corrective supplementation, you can test it. You know, but it takes some time as part of the healing process to correct all these broken parts and pieces. So I hope that helps. Steve, did you have anything to add?
No, man. I think you wrapped it up right there. Crushed it.
All right, thanks. I'm going to roll right in the next question. All right, this is from Meg. She says, "Hi, Steve and Jordan. You mentioned how some oils are better for us than others in this evening's webcast. I was just wondering where grapeseed oil fits in the spectrum. Is it one that should be avoided?"
Okay, thanks, Meg. That's a great question, and I think I looked back and grapeseed wasn't on the slide, so thanks for bringing this up. And the answer is yes, grapeseed oil is awful. It's one of the vegetable and seed oils that you definitely want to avoid, and the reason why is it's about 65% omega-6 fatty acid content by weight. So it's one of the worst offenders, right up there with the following ones that are just, you know, if you read something and it has it on it, which unfortunately it's really awful when you start to really dive into this omega-6, omega-3 thing, and you dive into the fact that you don't want to be eating vegetable and seed oils, you're going to realize that a lot of dried fruits are coated in these, your potato chips are coated in these, fast foods use these, you know, all the fast food companies, just like everything, like literally it's gross, just, and that's one of the reasons why on the standard American diet, the omega-6 to omega-3 ratio ends up being so out of whack, like 20 to 1, whereas we want it down to 1-to-1 or 1-to-2 in that range. So the other ones to really avoid and just kind of make a mental note of these, you don't want to be eating grapeseed oil, no cottonseed oil, sunflower oil is really bad, soybean oil, very bad, corn oil, and safflower oil. And the funny thing is things like safflower and grapeseed, they sound healthy, right? Well, they are definitely not. Avoid them at all costs. So after you avoid these like the plague, you're like, okay, what do I do now? So if you're looking to like just cook with something, I really highly recommend macadamia nut oil, coconut oil. But coconut oil has a lower smoke point, about 300 degrees. Macadamia nut oil has a 400 degree smoke point. And if you're really trying to like, you know, make sure you don't smoke yourself out and you want to protect everything, go with ghee. Ghee usually has a smoke point like 450 to 500, so it makes it great for cooking. If you just want to drizzle something, or you can also cook with it, but it has a really low smoke point, as well as olive oil. Stick to those as well as any animal fats you want. So, you know, any fat from, you know, deer to cow to anything. Just cook with those and avoid the high omega-6s. And I do just want to touch on a point. One of the people in the course here, Joanna, sent in a great little addition to the topic that we were talking about, the omega-3 versus omega-6. And she wanted to just let everybody know about the distinction that if you're looking to get EPA and DHA, which are the omega-3s from fish oil, don't be taking flaxseed oil. See, flaxseed oil, and this could be wrong. I know the science behind it that I'm about to tell you is not wrong, but the actual component of flaxseed oil, I believe, is ALA, alpha linoleic acid. There's studies that show that animals can convert that to EPA, DHA. However, it's been proven that humans cannot convert the ALA to EPA, DHA at anything more than less than 1%. So it's not that flaxseed oil is bad. It's extremely high in omega-3s. If you're just looking to get some healthy fats, you want some anti-inflammatory fats, flaxseed oil is a great choice. However, if you're looking to specifically supplement with EPA and DHA, you do need to use fish oil.
No, you got to. The only thing I'll add is grapeseed extract is actually helpful in very small amounts when you're using a neti pot to like beat a sinus infection. I have had really good luck with getting a little bottle of grapeseed extract and just dripping one or two drops in my neti pot of warm salt water when I'm trying to just blast out the sinus infection without using antibiotics. So, I don't know, just random side note on grapeseed. To throw it in.
Nice. Adding value, man. I like it. Okay, let's roll on to the next question here. Dear Jordan and Steve, first let me thank you for all the help. There's much important information in the advanced course, so much so that I have not been able to process it at all. I'm still working on it. No big deal. That's why you have lifetime access, and you can come back to these trainings whenever you need them. So let's move on to the questions. Number one is, should I take betaine and HCL with yogurt and fruit? How about with eggs, or the same amount, or should it be in the same amount as when I eat a meat meal?
That's a good question. So, you know, betaine is going to help the most with protein-heavy meals. And so taking betaine at every meal really depends on what you're eating. If you're not eating much protein with the meal, the betaine isn't going to help that much. Things like fermented sauerkraut actually can help stimulate stomach acid secretion if you're eating that, you know, in and of itself. But in some cases, and I've tested this, you know, I'll eat fermented sauerkraut 15 minutes before a regular meal, and it'll naturally increase my HCL secretion. So if I'm not eating a lot of protein, I might eat a little bit of sauerkraut, and then I don't need to take betaine with that meal. Specifically to your question, if you're just eating yogurt and fruit, you probably don't need it. There's not much protein going on there. But with the eggs, that's got some protein, so, you know, it might help. But not likely as much as when you eat a huge meat meal, but you just have to find out what your upper limit is with the burning. So, like, say if you take 1,000 milligrams at a heavy meat meal, you might have to test. If you're just eating eggs, you might test taking 300 or 600 milligrams and see how that does. If you get burning, that's a sign that you probably didn't need that much, and you can back down one pill again and try it next time you eat eggs. But you will have a specific upper limit depending on how much protein you eat, and you'll notice that change over time.
Yeah, I just want to jump in here real quick, man, and say that you said it correct right there at the end. It's all about that specific amount of protein that you're eating. So eggs have roughly, you can figure about 7 grams of protein per, like, whole egg. So if you figure, like, I don't know what a huge meat meal is, but maybe, like, 4 ounces of meat might be 20 grams of protein. Let's say 30 grams of protein for, like, 6 ounces or 8 ounces, depending on the meat you eat. So if you were to eat 4 whole eggs, that's around 28 grams of protein. You could pretty much figure that in. So if you're eating 4 to 5 eggs at a time, you're probably going to need exactly the same betaine HDL dosage as you would if you ate 4 to 6 ounces of meat. And that's how it works in my experience. So it's helpful to, it's another reason why we ask you to do the Fit Day thing, just to get comfortable with knowing what you're eating, kind of a little bit higher level knowledge of what's going into your body, so you can kind of estimate these types of things. So let's keep rolling on with question number two. Sometimes I wake up in the middle of the night with gas and low-grade nausea. Before starting SCD in the beginning of the diet, it happened almost every night. It had pretty well subsided, but during the last 2 weeks it started again, although not as severe in the past. I cannot seem to pinpoint any possible cause. Any suggestions for the causes, and more importantly, how to stop it?
Yeah, that one's a little tougher. You know, I'd ask a few things, like, what pills are you taking before bed? I've seen that in a few coaching instances with clients, they would take probiotics at night only before they went to bed. And when they would ramp up their dosage, they might experience some issues similar to that throughout the night. And so we had to test them taking it in the morning so it didn't disturb their sleep. But it would go away after a few days at the higher dosage. Another question might be, are you eating more than, you know, closer to bed than 2 hours? I find that even I have trouble if I eat too close to bedtime and then I lay down, it can cause some nausea for me, especially if it's a really high fat meal. It tends to bother me if it's too close to bedtime. I also might look at maybe some hormone testing if both of those things aren't an issue. I have heard that if you have a really out of whack circadian rhythm, which that balances out when your cortisol is high and when it's low, that sometimes you can have issues where your adrenaline can get released in the middle of the night and it just, like, wakes you up and you feel really bad. But that's kind of more unlikely. I'd start by really looking at, you know, what you're eating for dinner before bed and how soon you're eating it to bed and whether or not you gave it enough time to digest before you lay down. Also consider that it might be a moderation thing. So, like, with dinner, a lot of people end up eating more food than they eat with breakfast and lunch. So you might be eating even more than 2 cups of broccoli with dinner or more than a few cups of fruit, something like that. That's usually associated with larger dinner meals. And it might be that having 3 cups of broccoli is just way too much and it's causing problems, and that's where I would look too. So just a couple of random ideas there. Hopefully maybe one of those clicks with your situation, but I think that's all I have on that.
Good deal. Let's roll on to number 3 from Ruth. I've been on SCD for 7 months. Last weekend for 3 days, I felt miserable. Headache, low-grade nausea, too many loose BMs, but not D, etc. And I'm not feeling as well as I was. Could this have been another die-off?
Yeah, you know, it could have been die-off. It's kind of unlikely, though. I might actually look at, specifically, if you can tell me that nothing has changed in your diet, so you have not changed any foods, you have not introduced anything new or cheated or increased any to any extremes of moderation, if you can tell me honestly that none of that has changed, then I might look at it being stress-related. So I might ask you if you have anything going on in your life that's been stressful lately. The gut-brain connection is so strong, and even now in my life, that when I have a big stressful event or work deadlines, I'll sometimes feel bad and have diarrhea for a day or two. But I also know that when I practice meditation and have good social fun, like we talked about in sessions 6 and 3, I'm really able to better tolerate high-stress times in my life without it impacting my gut. But as soon as the life gets in the way, you know, and I stop doing it, and I just don't have time and that stuff, and then I hit a little stressful patch or a little bit of lack of sleep patch, I'll notice that I'll have trouble again, and I'll have to kind of just reset and go back to what I need to do, the meditation and the yoga, and I can get through times of stress much better. So that's where I would probably look first. All right. Well, I'm going to keep rolling. Steve, this one's for you. It says, hey, guys. First off, Slate, thanks so much for the help. I do not know how anyone would navigate this diet on their own. I'm currently out of my flare and moving along well. I've been on the diet for approximately 10 weeks now and just about to enter into stage 3. I'm taking all the 6 recommended supplements, and up until about 4 days ago, I was having perfect number 4s, 1 to 2 times a day for the last 3 weeks. That is awesome, by the way. I've recently been seeing some more undigested food in my stool, and it's been getting a little looser. I'm currently going back through my log and previous sessions to try and diagnose. Any thoughts? I have been eating a lot of fruit, and over the last 3 weeks, I introduced cheese, yogurt, mushrooms, bell peppers, eggs, artichoke, holy cow. no adverse reactions in the 4-day intervals, so the only real thing I can see is the amount of fruit that I have fallen into consuming. It's just so easy and good. Take it away, Steve.
Okay, cool. Great question from Nate. This is a multi-parter, I believe, too. So, kind of like the last question that Ruth asked, this is, believe it or not, a really common story that we hear from many people over and over, and it doesn't matter what you start off with your digestive problem, a lot of people seem to fall into this pattern. And what it is that they find a really great health place or a great plateau or level, whatever you want to call it, like Nate has here, where he's having perfect poops for like 3 weeks, and then all of a sudden, progressively, maybe it's just one day they wake up and it happens, or maybe it's a slow slide over a couple days or weeks as they're adding in foods and stuff, is they start to notice a slight regression, even though they've been meticulous about all of it. So when this happens and someone mentions that they might be overeating anything, like Nate says, he said with this fruit there, then instinctively I think that they know that they are. So if you have that thought, you're going back to your log and you're like, I wonder if you're not supposed to be eating a whole pint of blueberries and cherries in a day or something like that, or you just listen to your internal dialogue and you're usually right. This is not to say that Nate did this. I'm not going to put words in his mouth or fruit in his mouth for that matter, but it's just something to be aware of. The variables here, again, that most people miss when they finally achieve this kind of health, they become so in tune with their body, it becomes the final layers of the onion that I was talking about. So as you peeled back all these major layers, you're getting down to the really thin and fine layers. And now you're at the point where you'll start to notice what happens if it's a really stressful week, or if you don't get the usual quality sleep that you're used to for a few nights. Or for a woman, maybe it's that time of the month, or like you said, maybe you just started consuming a bit too much of one kind of food. It could be fruit, it could be vegetables, it could be anything like that. The big key here is moderation. So keeping with that balanced perspective, most people can eat 5 or 6 servings of fruit a day. They might feel, and they should probably feel fine when they're at this level of health. Others don't ever feel good eating more than 3, and some do great eating 9 servings of fruit and or veggies or anything like that. But I'm just making the point here that, you have to test, and everybody's going to have a little individual level. So, somebody could eat a pint of blueberries and be totally fine. The takeaway here is that they usually need to spread these out across different meals. So even if Nate is eating a lot of fruit, if he breaks it up and he has 2 servings at breakfast, lunch, and dinner, that's 6 servings a day, but he broke them up. And so that makes it easier to digest, and usually you're not going to have as many troubles. So you might want to check your different meals. If you got really, really fruit-heavy in the morning or really fruit-heavy at night, that could be causing it. Lastly, review your stress, your sleep, any emotional issues that may have changed over the last 2 weeks. Usually the week that you notice the regression, it's not what happened that week. That week was just like the breaking point. It's usually like the weeks leading up to that week also contributed. So it's super normal to have these slight regressions. The best thing that I can tell you to do is really try to take inventory of your life, what's been happening. Like I said, your emotional levels, stress levels, sleep levels. And the best thing to do at this point, even if say Nate wasn't adding in these advanced stage 3, stage 4 foods, maybe he was just in phase 1 or something, I would probably tell him just the same thing that I would tell him in phase 4, and that's just to sit still, stop adding anything, stop doing anything. We want to get you back to how you were feeling a week ago. So just chill out for 7 days or so. If you do suspect one group of food, such as fruit or something, you don't need to cut it out, just cut it back a little bit. And just sit there for a week or so and wait it out, and everything should bounce back.
All right, man. Excellent answer. Keep rolling here with the next part of the question. A few questions that I have are, when I introduced the fish oil supplement, I messed up on the calculator the whole Nine Life had and did only the maintenance level fish oil for the first 3 weeks instead of the large amounts that I was supposed to be taking. Should I start over with a large amount and then scale down to the current maintenance level, or just stay now that I have come to this point in my healing already?
Okay, so again, Nate is right at the cusp of his answer, and I think intuitively he knows what to do. It's a great question, and I'm sure other people have this question as well. After you reach a level of healing like this, you've been feeling much better and having good symptoms, good poops. The large dosage of fish oil is really not needed. It's probably best just to keep everything the same. Remember, stick to the plan, stick to whatever you've been doing that's been giving those types of results. So I would say stay right at the maintenance level. We don't want to mess with success, and really just want to reiterate that those high dosages from the whole Nine Life calculator and the whole Rob Wolf fish oil protocol is best to do those high dosages when you're really inflamed, when you're having a setback, like a major setback, like a flare or something, not one of these slides or anything like that. This is not the time to use this tool. This tool is best to kind of keep it constant, keep the inflammation down, and only most times when people are first starting fish oil supplementation will they start at the really high range. But at this stage of healing and peeling back the onion layers, just stay at the maintenance level. It's the best thing to do.
All right, I'm going to keep rolling. I was also curious to find out at what stage the two of you were in when you hit the 90-day mark, and how long did it take you to get through to stage 5? I'm to a point where I'm going to try to introduce almond nut butter, and I was wondering if you guys make your own or if you buy certain products. I've researched online, and it does not seem that hard to make, but I've never done it, and almonds are expensive to mess up. In the last session, I wasn't clear about using homemade yogurt along with the powder protic. I have not gone back through and reviewed yet, but that seems like quite a bit of CFUs in one shot. Again, thanks so much for your help and advice, Nate.
Okay, great question, Nate. I'll just kind of quickly summarize. Around 100 days or so, I basically just kind of jumped from phase 3 to phase 4. I was in the middle of phase 3 right around 90 days. I added a couple more in. And at that point, I was feeling really amazing, and I kind of jumped around in phase 4, phase 5, and ate some raw things like berries and salads. And it went really well. So I just kind of forgot about the phases and just started picking whatever at that point, as long as it didn't kind of set me back. So I feel like this kind of happens to a lot of people as well. It doesn't necessarily always happen at 90 days. It can happen in, 6 months for that matter, maybe a year. But when it does happen, I think it's fine if you just start picking random vegetables or fruits or anything from phases 4 and 5. Just keep testing them meticulously and add them in like you want to see them. So with the nut butters, they can totally be made at home. You got to make sure you have a good blender. I don't do it because, I guess I'm lazy basically, because I can just go down to my local market and my local health food store, and they have like fresh weekly ground nut butters. They have almond, cashew, that type of things. They taste amazing. Also, some of the higher-end grocery stores probably in your area will have some other legal brands. And a legal brand for this matter, there's not really any documentation about which brands are legal according to the way Elaine Gottschall likes it done, but you're just looking to find a label that doesn't have anything added other than the nuts that you're going to be eating, the nut butter. So I just want that nut, and that's it. So again, with nuts, they're fats. They can go rancid. So the newer the nut butter is, the fresher it is, the more likely it's going to be good for you. So that's why I would stick to the freshly made ones from your local health food store or a supermarket or a local market. Excuse me. Finally, the last question, the probiotics. This is a great question. We encourage people to keep taking their probiotic pill dosage as they ramp into SD legal yogurt. And the reason why is that probiotics are going to be a special strain. The pill form that you're taking right now to sustain this kind of good health is a special strain of bacteria that's going to be different than the yogurt. So together they can be synergistic. It's not always about the dose of CFUs for probiotics. It's also about the strains of individual bacteria. So what usually happens is, say that you're at like 40 billion CFUs of probiotics per day. You start to work your way into yogurt. Maybe maybe you're 30, 45 days, 50 days into the diet, you're feeling great. So you start your work way into yogurt. Takes you a week or two or three. You mess it up a couple times, figure it out. You find a sweet zone with both of them, and you're feeling great. Next, I would say, okay, now it's time to take it one step further and optimize. So now what we might want to do is we know long-term it's probably cheaper, tastes better to go with yogurt, and we know that the probiotic dosage in the yogurt is much higher than the pills. So let's try to get off the probiotics. And so what I would do over a few days, you know, 1 to 3, is taper down off of your 40 billion and see if you remain at the same level of health. If so, great. You're going to save some money and take less pills every day. Simple as that. Now, some people might not happen. They might taper off, and 4 days later, they might be seeing a slight regression. So then you go back on the pills, and it might go away. And all this means is that you just have some other things going on. You just need to test and tweak, and maybe in 2 to 3 months, you can try testing, tweaking the probiotics again. It's just part of the process, and I think it's all natural. Okay, without further ado, we will move on to the next question. Steven Jordan, I really enjoyed this session, much more than I thought it was going to be. My husband hasn't been working out for a couple of years because it totally wiped him out. And I've really cut back because I've lost so much weight and didn't want to lose more. So it was great to know that we can gain muscle without adding many calories. I've already bought one of the exercise books, and I'm psyched to get up and start it. My big concern is still my husband's weight. I got a lot of great ideas from this session, such as the weight gain shake. He feels like I'm stuffing him, despite the fact that FitDay.com indicates he's barely getting his recommended calories, even with heavy fat use. Any chance that you could share what Jordan eats in a typical day or week? George is 6'1 and has bottomed out at 155 pounds. After 6 months on SCD GAPS, he's noticeably gained a bit of energy and clarity. However, he still has a way to go, which doesn't surprise me too, given that he was a junk food junkie for the first 45 years of his life. I have to get him back to run tests to see how he's doing, but prior to SCD GAPS, the doctor said he was a cort low in almost everything, including testosterone. As a little background, he didn't test positive for celiac marker and doesn't have the symptoms of a person suffering from Crohn's or colitis. His main problems have been lack of energy, stomach upset, occasional loose stool, memory problems, and he tested positive to reactions of a whole host of foods. She says, can you say leaky gut? Yes, it is probably leaky gut. I'm really sad that this is the last week of the sessions. I've gotten a lot out of each one, especially since I can't you can't watch them again or print them off and highlight the items that are especially relevant. Especially since I can watch them again and print them off. I was going to say, everyone has lifetime access to this. You can print off the transcripts, and you can watch the videos. You can download the videos and burn them on DVDs if you wanted. So thanks, Sandy. It's a great question. And Jordan, take it away, man.
Yeah, that was a lot of good stuff. I can totally relate. I'm also 6'1", and my lowest weight on SCD was 145. So I lost almost 35 pounds probably within the first 6 months. So a couple of things that would help me give you better advice with your husband would be if you could give me an example of what he eats, or tell me more about what his symptoms are. But, you know, all I can do at this point is talk more specifically about my case and the fact that the big point I want to drive home right now is that it's not about the calories, okay? And it is at first, because when most people switch to a natural diet, they really struggle to get the amount of calories that they need, because when you switch to a natural diet, you're eating a lot more food and not getting as many calories. So we do have people generally in the beginning say, okay, well, are you getting enough calories? And like we talked about in session five, we talked about, are you getting enough calories for your BMR plus your activity level plus a little bit more for inflammation? And, you know, in my case, I finally had to realize that because my inflammation was higher and my testosterone was lower, I really wasn't going to gain fat mass by eating more and more calories. If you remember, I was eating like 3,500 calories a day and still not gaining weight. And I did that for months and months and months and months and months until I finally realized that what I needed to do instead was focus on increasing my testosterone and slowly gaining muscle again. And again, you know, you said your husband has tested for low testosterone as well. So he's probably in the same boat that I was. So I started finally doing some short intensity heavy lifting. You know, I didn't do cardio just to burn calories or anything like that. I just do a set of weights and then rest, and I kind of kept an eye on my heart rate, made sure it didn't get too fast, but then I do another set, you know, et cetera. And, you know, as my testosterone started climbing, I started to feel better and better, and I noticed that my inflammation was going down, things started falling into place at that point, and I started to gain muscle mass finally. And actually, I gained a little bit of fat mass too. And at that point, I actually started lowering my calories because I was putting on fat mass, and I really wanted to avoid too much of that and just focus on adding muscle. And we know that we don't need more calories to add muscle. The more calories are just going to add fat mass, okay? So the thing about adding muscle, though, is it takes time. And especially if he's, you know, in a very emaciated state like I was. But the big takeaway point here is it's not about the calories anymore, okay? Again, it is at first. When you first switch to SCD, you may only be getting like 1,500 calories and not know it. So it's the first time you're eating natural foods. You got to realize what 3,000 calories or 2,500 calories actually looks like. Once you get there, it's not about that anymore. What you really need to do is start taking the time to throw on some weights. And lift some heavy stuff. You know, ease into it. I know I had so many fears and worries about it, and I thought I was wasting away, and there was no way I could ever go up the stairs too fast, or I might burn too many calories, and I might die from losing too many calories. But once I got over that, which took a long time, believe me, that was huge for me. And that's when I started to finally gain muscle, and that's when my family started saying, wow, you look healthier. You look a lot better. I was really worried about you for the last 6 months. That's when that all started to change. So make sure to use the worksheet from session 5 and focus on doing the key things to have his raise his testosterone back up. That 3,500 calorie meal, you know, it's probably too much. You know, 3,000 might be more reasonable. I can run through a quick example of what I ate for food in a day. I would just have like 10 ounces of turkey breakfast sausage and about 3 tablespoons of coconut oil. For lunch, I might have like 3/4 of a pound of pork tenderloin and a couple of cups of broccoli. This is when I was very low carb. And then I would have, for dinner, I might have like 3/4 of a pound of burgers that were cooked on the grill. And then I might have 1 cup of pear sauce and then 2 cups of cucumber. Okay, and that's all I ate. And that was like 3,000 calories. And, you know, honestly, I've increased my carbs since then. I've scaled way back on the meat. I'm feeling much better. I don't gain as much fat mass, and I'm able to actually put the muscle on. And then as a final side note, I might recommend testing the L-glutamine protocol from session 6 to help improve that leaky gut situation. So, all right, hopefully that helped. I'm going to keep rolling here because we're cutting down on time. So this one's for Steve. Guys, when I started the SCD diet in your book, I also bought Josh Gilder's True Gut CVD and book. Now that I've bought into SCD, his diet seems very inconsistent with SCD in general at times. But one idea that sounds very interesting is juicing with fresh vegetables. What do you think about introducing vegetable juicing? Thanks, Andy.
Yeah, great question, Andy. Glad that you bought into SCD and not that other thing. I'm not really sure how viable it is. But so juicing. Juicing's interesting because you see it in lots of different diets, especially diets people claim that cure them of diseases, such as vegans, vegetarians, even like natural raw foodists and stuff like that. They all are big into vegetable juicing. And I'm not going to argue with a lot of the people who claim huge jumps in health because, you know, it might have happened with them. I also know that while others are claiming better health, they also admit that they're on the toilet like all day, every day. So I really get a little worried about this, and it's really, really incongruent with me that this is actually helping. There's the big placebo effect. I'm sure you're all aware of that. You know, sometimes as much as 50% of something could be placebo. So I'm not ruling it out saying that it's not possible to help because you are going to get a big payload of like some phytonutrients, lots of other nutrients coming out of these vegetables and fruits. But I think if it starts to hamper the work we're doing with our digestion and it starts to speed up everything and put you on the toilet all day with loose bowel movements, you're obviously not even digesting what you're eating, so I don't think it's worth it. Now, a big reason why this probably happens is I see a lot of people, a lot of gurus or just bloggers and stuff, they come up with juicing concoctions that taste amazing, right? Well, then when you look at the ingredients on these amazing juicing concoctions, it's usually like 3 apples, a banana, a pear, and then like a celery stalk. And so it's like all sugar basically. So if the fruit outnumber the vegetables, I'm automatically like almost against it basically. It's not that I'm like anti-fruit, but when you squeeze out all the juice from a fruit, that's just like drinking a cup of fruit juice. That's like drinking grape juice. You know, if you can't drink grape juice, you're probably not going to be okay with pear juice, apple juice, any of these other juices, even if it is natural. You're just ingesting too much sugar at one point in time. So I guess to wrap this up, I'm not against the idea. I just have my doubts. It's not to say that it might really work for you. I would totally test it out just like everything else in this course. It's an advanced idea. However, I would stick to going heavier on the veggies and lower in the fruits. So maybe do something like avocado, spinach, juicing, smoothie or something like that. I know there's a bunch of different recipes out there. Just be cautious which ones you choose and maybe stick to the veggie ones with, you know, like, you know, four different veggies and one apple or two apples. Stay away from the ones that are like, you know, tons of carrots and tubs of apples. It just turns into a sugar payload. So, and then obviously just track and observe and let us know how it goes, definitely. Okay, so let's keep rolling here. Jordan, this one's coming at you, man. So, hey, how's it going? Been slowly working my way through the MP3s in the program I bought. Just a quick question. If you're eating kefir and cultured veggies at a meal, is it good to also take HDL and enzymes? Or does the HDL destroy the probiotic value of the cultured foods? For example, is it necessary that they be eaten separately? Or put this another way, I'm wasting all the work making the cultured veggies if I use HDL at the same meal? And if you're eating cultured foods with a meal, do you even need the extra enzymes and the HDL? Thanks so much for the help.
All right, good question. So again, we talked about this earlier, but taking betaine with a meal really depends on what you're eating at that meal. If it's high in protein, then betaine is going to help a lot. If there's not much protein in the meal, you might not notice that it helps much at all, and you might have a high stomach burning that happens at a low dosage. Things like fermented sauerkraut actually will help stimulate acid secretion. So in some cases, and I've tested this before, is that I'll eat fermented sauerkraut 15 minutes before a regular meal to naturally increase my HDL secretion. So in that case, it's being used to help stimulate HDL secretion rather than to get a probiotic effect. If you're looking to get the probiotic effect, you'd probably benefit more from having the kefir or the cultured veggies at their own meal. Or, you know, 30 minutes before a meal or later on after the meal. The idea there is that when your pH level is very low, the probiotics have a less likely lifespan to make it through down to the small intestine and large intestine. Whereas when you're eating it at a more neutral pH, without a lot of protein and fats, you're going to have a better probability that it's going to make it through alive and doing well to help you out down there. The addition of enzymes, they don't really affect the probiotic in the foods much. So it's only the stomach acid, the HCL, that's going to affect them. If you're not eating them with protein-rich meals, you likely don't need the HCL. If you are, the best option is to eat them, you know, just like I said, 30 minutes before the meal, and then still take your betaine. I don't think that you should stop taking your betaine just because you're having kefir or cultured veggies at that meal if you have a lot of protein. So hopefully that helps, and let us know how it goes.
Yeah, I just want to interject here that that this is all an evolving science. So what Jordan just explained is basically theory. So from the theory and from a logic standpoint, it makes sense that if you have a higher stomach acid, it's going to kill live things because that's what it's there to do. It's there to sterilize what you eat so that you don't get any, you know, pathogens or anything like that. So the logically is that it could kill most of the probiotics. But that's not to say that the probiotics don't already have they don't already have worked their magic by the time the betaine hits them. It doesn't say that maybe they still help you even after the betaine kills part of them. So I would continue to keep consuming them, maybe try some of the things that Jordan pointed out, but don't write it off and don't think like you're totally wasting your time or something.
Yeah, that's a great point. And sometimes I always forget to say that the current level of thinking is, because it always changes, when brand new studies come out. So, all right, excellent. I'll roll into the last question before we take live Q&A. Thanks, Jordan. Quick one. The goat's milk yogurt I made looks very soupy and not consistent with lots of white floaties in it. Do you think I made it wrong, or is it that different from cow's milk yogurt? I used a little over an eighth teaspoon of the GI Pro off the yogurt starter to 2 quarts of goat's milk. Thanks, Andy.
Okay, Andy, great question. So I would ask you, like, how much of it is soupy? Like, is it just a little bit of a layer, a couple inches of a layer, and then it's kind of, like, hard below that with some floaties? Or is the entire thing, like, there's no real substitute or substance inside of it? If that's the case, that's kind of happened to me a couple times when I accidentally fermented it past, like, 28 hours. I let it go, like, 30 or 36 hours. And it definitely affects the consistency, and I kind of ended up throwing those out. Otherwise, it might be fine. What you could do to get rid of the soupiness is just to drip it. That'll give it a better consistency. The other thing that might be going on is it might be fermenting at too high of a temperature. I'm not sure if it's summer where you are, it's summer where we are, and if you're if you're used to making it, like, say, winter, that's when you started or something, and you've made better batches in the past, it could be that it was just really hot that day, and that also affected the heating temperature of your yogurt, so maybe you need to check the temperature a little bit better next time. So if that is the case, you need to regulate the temperature. You can get a cheap little voltage regulator from, like, your nearest home goods store, and that works really easy. There's instructions in our book. And also drip it. So I don't think it's ruined, but I know that if there's a ton of soupiness in it, usually I wasn't the best batch I ever made. So the best batches I ever made were pretty solid until I kind of mixed them up. So if you don't, I guess if anybody out there is listening and they don't know where that is in our book, it's right around pages 93 to 96. And if not, just send us an email. We'll get you a copy and send you right where you need to go.
All right, excellent. That wraps up our submitted questions, and I wanted to open it up to live Q&A right now. So if you have a question, go open the questions box in the upper right corner and let us know what your question is. And in the meantime, while you're typing your question in the question box, I just wanted to make a quick point that, you know, we've been seeding this idea, this whole idea of testing for the past 6 training sessions. You need to pick something and test it. And I want to encourage you to embrace the failures, because we've tested quite a few things that failed miserably and didn't make us feel better. And then we've tested them again later, and they made us feel great. And, you know, it just depends on where you're at in your healing. It depends on a lot of things. But think of it as a fun thing. You know, it's a fun experiment of finding out what helps and what doesn't, and knowing that and then accepting it and moving on. So I just wanted to make that final point in terms of the testing aspect of how things are going.
Yeah, I think that's a good point, Jordan, and I think that's just part of adopting the lifestyle, the mentality of taking your health back and taking it in your own hands, is that it's an unproven science, and hopefully you can learn a lot from people like us. And there's lots of other gurus and health people out there who've gone through it themselves. And so maybe you can learn something from them. But the fact of the matter is you're N equals 1, and your experience is just going to be slightly different than ours. And so there will be things that work for us that won't work for you, and conversely, things that didn't work for us that will work for you. So if you find a failure, all that means is you did a good job. You tested something, and you found out, you know what? Turns out, right now, that is not good for my health. So, definitely do not get down on yourself. Just look ahead and try something else. Okay, so I think there's a question here that we can roll in, kind of hot on the press. It says, I've been taking HCL and enzymes with meals and probiotics and kefir, cultured veggies in between meals. My BMs are really good right now. That's the good news. However, I'm experiencing some heartburn. And if I eat anything without the HCL, for example, soaked nuts or seeds, I have almost never had heartburn before in my life, so this concerns me. Could my body have become lazy and stopped producing HCL because I'm using capsules? If I take an HCL cap with the nuts snack, it's not so bad. But it seems a bad sign if I could eat nuts without heartburn in the past and now I'm having it. Any thoughts on this?
That's a good question. I don't think it's a case that you're, you know, getting accustomed to the HCL and not secreting it. The general consensus on the web and anecdotally is that as you take HCL over time, like up to 6 months, many people are able to back off it. Steve and I mean, we've struggled with that. I've backed off to, I think I take 600 milligrams at protein-heavy meals and then 300 milligrams at less heavy protein meals, and I'm kind of stuck there. But that's just one in two pills. So I haven't completely figured out, you know, how to fix that. But again, this is the lens of we have disease, so we have parts of our processes that are broken. But I don't think it's because you took the HCL. I might actually look at maybe seeing if you have H. pylori overgrowth or C. diff, and maybe get tested for those. I know they can really impact HCL secretion. But other than that, I would encourage you to, if you're getting heartburn, to continue taking HCL. And heartburn generally is caused by intra-abdominal pressure. And that pressure forces just a little bit of stomach acid through that esophageal opening. And because it's not coated like a stomach lining, just a tiny, tiny bit of HCL from your stomach, from that pressure boiling up in there, that will cause that pain to happen, even just a little tiny bit. So you want to keep that pressure down by taking the HCL when you eat meals like even just the nuts. There's protein in nuts, so you need to take some level of betaine-HCL, especially if you notice that it's curbing your symptom a little bit. So hopefully that helps. Steve, do you have anything to add?
Just that, everything from Dr. Jonathan Wright, the other doctors out there right now suggest that taking HCL caps is not going to lower your body's ability to produce HCL. What it does is it retrains your body's ability at how acidic it should make the stomach. And as Jordan said, we are still trying to figure out how to taper off of it. As I think in Dr. Jonathan's book, he talks about people starting to taper at 6 months or maybe taper back at a year. However, he does mention some people could be on it up to 2 years. I'm fastly approaching 2 years on it and haven't tapered off it. And in fact, you know, as my health has gotten better, I think I've started to take a little bit more than when I started. So we're still trying to figure that out. But in the meantime, I don't think it's a bad thing to keep using it at all. So,
yeah, I mean,
dude, there's a great question in here from Joanna. I think you got to feed it to me.
I just wanted to add that, yeah, I mean, if you're taking HCL like we are and you're stuck on it, and it makes you feel great, what's wrong with keeping taking it for right now? Until you figure it out later, just keep taking it, feel good. All right, here's a question from Joanna, and I think we can both answer this, and I'll kick it to you first. But she says, in addition to all the great foods we eat regularly, there are lots of SCD recipes out there for sweet treats like ice cream, toffee, cookies, etc. You guys seem so disciplined with your diet, sticking to meats, veggies, and some fruit. Are you holding out on us? What treats do you like to eat?
Okay, cool question, Joanna. I dig it. I don't think we're holding out on you. I think that we just went through some stages and we're past them. And to be honest, I'll let Jordan speak for himself. But for me, I went through stages where I made cookies, I made muffins, I made coconut milk ice cream, which is like super easy. You can just get a can that's illegal, get some fruit, blend it up, and then freeze it. Turns out great. You can make all different kinds of smoothies. Those are awesome. The cookies and the muffins, they taste great too. But really, excuse me, I'm lazy. That's what it boils down to. Believe it or not, I get lazy, so I don't make them that often. It's just extra work. I would rather eat some like a crazy fresh fruit salad with like a bunch of veggies. It's like less work for me to make. It's not to say that when parties roll around and I go on camping trips and vacation, I definitely usually load up on the different cookies and muffins and that kind of thing. And I would say maybe like one staple snack or indulgence or maybe is I do love carrots, like raw baby carrots with almond or cashew butter, just like dipping it in and munching on those. However, I got to be careful how much I eat at one sitting, otherwise it can kind of screw with my digestion. So, I mean, that's where I'm at. I've gone through the different stages of making all those different things, and I'm just kind of past it. But if that's what you love and you do fine with your digestion, by all means, go for it.
Yeah, I agree, man. I mean, I went through a stage. I have a giant, like, I don't remember if it's 5 or 10 pound bag of almond, organic blanched almond flour in my freezer. And I went through a stage where I burned up half of it pretty quick. And it was like, okay, this is cool. I don't really care to do all this work anymore. And you know what a sweet treat to me right now is like, if I eat raw, I'll eat 6 ounces of raw raspberries in a day. And that is just awesome to me. Or strawberries just taste incredible. Or blueberries, you know, that kind of stuff. Or make a beet apple salad with some olive oil and maybe a little onion in there. I love making the beet apple salad. Something like that, all fresh in there, you know, maybe with some cabbage too. So that's something that's really a sweet treat for me. But the key is that it's fast, easy, and all natural. I don't like to spend a lot of time baking. I really would just rather spend time with my family. Another thing that I've been experimenting with that I just had this weekend is one of the safe starches is plantains. And my wife had this down in Puerto Rico, but you deep fry some plantains in coconut oil, and you take them out and dip them in cold water, and then deep fry them again in coconut oil. And my God, those were a sweet treat. I would eat those all day long before I'd eat, you know, any SCD cheesecake or anything like that. So when you talk about indulgences and sweet treats for me, I just love me some berries, some raw berries, man. That does it for me. And then the plantains were just incredible too. So I think that's about it for me and sweet treats.
Yeah. I got to add that I think I just get more satisfaction from spending my time creating like the best meat ever, like the best steak, cooking it the best and getting a cool marinade. I don't know. I just, every once in a while I do get that sweet craving or whatever, and I'll figure out a way to indulge in it or whatever, but it doesn't become a daily thing like it used to be for me because it just so much work there. So.
Well, yeah, and the other point is, too, is that when I went through that stage and started making some almond stuff, it seemed like I was going back to some of the way I used to feel on the standard American diet where I wouldn't get any satiating feeling from these meals. Like, I would eat muffins or whatever for breakfast or test them, and I would be hungry again 2 hours later, and I wouldn't get that full satiated feeling that I got from my turkey breakfast sausage and all my coconut oil. It just wasn't fulfilling. I kept going back to those blood sugar spikes and just not feeling full and feeling like I needed to snack. I hated that. I hated that feeling. So for me, that was a big thing that really deterred me over time. I think that that about wraps it up. Joanna asks, will there be an advanced course to come? Stay tuned. We're always working on something.
Yeah, yep. As we figure stuff out, we'll be looking to teach other people how to figure it out. So,
yeah, the other thing is, too, you'll always have lifetime access to the members area. So, you know, if we add anything new to the members area, we'll send out an email and let you know what's going on there. So thanks for listening. This has been Jordan Reisner and Steve Wright with the Advanced SCD Techniques Q&A Session 3, the final session.